The world is a complicated place. You need someone to expose the political fakers, fixers, and takers, and to cut through the mindless chatter and misdirection to help you make sense of it all. That person is Dan Proft, and this is The Dan Proft Show.
Welcome back to The Dan Proft Show. I'm John Hinderacher from Powerline, filling in for Dan today. And by the way, I will also be filling in on Thursday and Friday of this week, so be sure to tune in on those nights as well. We are joined now by George Perry. George is a former federal and state prosecutor, and between 1978 and 1983, he was the chief of the Police Brutality and Misconduct Unit of the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office. George, thanks for being on the program.
John, nice to be with you.
George, I want to talk to you about George Floyd. His death became a pivotally important moment in history, really. I mean, we've all witnessed, we don't have to recite it, we've all witnessed the things that have spun out as a result of his death here in Minneapolis, and the fact that millions of people witnessed that death, or thought they did, on video. The cultural impact of this has really been extraordinary, hasn't it?
Well, yeah, and the perception that was caused by the widespread broadcast of the video showing the last few minutes of Mr. Floyd's arrest has led people to believe that the police caused his death. And when I watched that video, having become familiar over the years with drug overdose deaths and the manner in which police deal with drug overdoses, I felt that that really wasn't the whole story in terms of the police causing his death. And slowly, the prosecution has released more and more material. For example, they released transcripts of the body-worn video cameras worn by the police, as well as the autopsy and toxicology reports pertaining to Mr. Floyd's death. And once I was able to review all of that evidence, to me, the conclusion was clear that the police officers did not cause Mr. Floyd's death. And as a matter of fact, had no criminal intent in their handling of Mr. Floyd when they arrested him.
So, George, I'm going to pause you there for a moment because we're going to come back and talk about the autopsy and the toxicological report and so on. Very, very important. But the observation I want to make and get your thoughts on is the importance of that first 8 minute long video that came out. And it shows the officers kneeling on George Floyd on the street there in Minneapolis. And one of the officers, Derek Chauvin, is kneeling on his throat or neck or in that area. And as you watch that video, you see George Floyd get quieter, stop moving at one point, or maybe more than one point. You hear him say, "I can't breathe," and millions of people watch that video, and they assumed that George Floyd couldn't breathe because the officer's kneeling on his neck, and they believe that they are watching a man die as a result of police action. And we see just constantly referred to, asserted as an unquestionable fact, that these Minneapolis police officers murdered George Floyd. You see that all the time.
A couple of things. Number one, when you review all of the evidence in the case, including the videos that preceded that last 8 minutes of video, what comes out is, number one, George Floyd began shouting that he couldn't breathe while he was still upright and mobile. And he was saying that. He said that seven times before he wound up on the ground. Nobody was kneeling on his neck. Nobody was, you know, pressing on his back or his chest. The police were trying to get him seated in a squad car, and he was resisting that. He was being noncompliant. And through that whole process, he's shouting, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe." So that when he's on the ground and he's saying the same thing, the question becomes, well, wait a minute. Why was he saying, "I can't breathe," while he was still upright and mobile and no one was kneeling on his neck? And the answer to that question didn't become apparent until the toxicology report was received, and that was on May 31, 2020. The medical examiner in Hennepin County, and this is after charges have been brought against the police, they received the toxicology report, and the toxicology report showed that Mr. Floyd had a toxic overdose of fentanyl in his system. And as noted in the toxicology report, fentanyl depresses respiration and can lead to coma and death. And also in the literature, as well as in the statement by the chief medical examiner, a toxic overdose of fentanyl can cause the lungs to fill up with a frothy fluid called edema. And they found that Mr. Floyd's lungs weighed 2 to 3 times normal at autopsy. Why did they weigh that much, or why were they, did they weigh 2 to 3 times normal? Because they were filled with fluid, this edema. And the police, one of the police officers, Officer King, at the scene, and this is also on the tape, he says to Floyd, "You're foaming at the mouth." And Floyd said, "Yeah, I've been hooping." Well, I don't know what hooping means, but the observation was made in real time that Mr. Floyd was foaming at the mouth. Well, that foaming at the mouth is also a symptom of edema. So when he is saying, while he's still upright, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe," it's because his lungs are filling up with fluid. And that led to the agitation that he exhibited. And so that when they have him on the ground and he's still saying, "I can't breathe," it becomes clear that the reason he can't breathe is not because Officer Chauvin is kneeling on the side of his neck. And by the way, that neck restraint used by Officer Chauvin is taught to the Minneapolis Police Department. It's in their training materials, and there is a photograph that I used in one of my articles taken from the training materials showing a police officer kneeling on the side of a suspect's neck. This was not something Chauvin thought up on the fly or on the spur of the moment. This was part of their training on how you restrain someone who is noncompliant, agitated, and incoherent, which Floyd was all of those things. So if you put it all together, what it comes down to is Mr. Floyd had a toxic overdose of fentanyl in his system that led to the shutdown of his respiration, filled his lungs with fluid, and caused him to say, "You know, I can't breathe, I can't breathe." And he died either as a direct result of the fentanyl overdose or as the result of what is known as excited delirium, which is a condition where he exhibited all of the classic traits of someone suffering from excited delirium, which leads to sudden onset of cardiac arrhythmia and cardiac arrest.
And now, so we're talking with the conclusion.
Go ahead, George.
Well, we're talking with former prosecutor George Perry. And George, we've talked more than once about the idea of a fentanyl overdose, but let's get specific about that in terms of what the toxicology report showed. As I recall, it showed that George Floyd's blood had, I think the unit is 11, and I think the units are micrograms per milliliter. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, 11 nanograms of fentanyl per milliliter of blood.
Nanograms, okay. In any event, 11 is the relevant number. And the literature documents fatal overdoses of fentanyl down at what level?
Well, in the toxicology report itself, there's a comment or reference section and says that the fatal overdose or toxic level of fentanyl is variable and has been reported to be as low as 3 nanograms per milliliter. And here he had 11 nanograms per milliliter. So he had over 3 times the potentially fatal dosage of fentanyl in his system. Now, for those who want to argue that while 3 nanograms per milliliter may kill someone who has no experience with fentanyl, there is, and, you know, Floyd may well have been addicted to fentanyl, so it would take a larger dosage to kill him. There's a study out of Florida of 143 fentanyl overdose deaths among fentanyl addicts. And they found that the median fatal dosage among fentanyl addicts was 9.8 nanograms per milliliter of blood. And so Floyd exceeded that standard as well.
But George, we're up against a hard break here. Let me just pause you there for a moment. We're going to run to these messages, and we'll be right back with more from George Perry.
Exposing political fakers, fixers, and takers. He's Dan Proft, and this is The Dan Proft Show.
We are back on The Dan Proft Show, talking with former prosecutor George Perry about what happened to George Floyd. And before the break, George, we were talking about the fact that, Floyd had in his blood a level of fentanyl that clearly could have been and likely was fatal. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, that is. That's what he had.
And in addition to that, before this famous eight and a half minute tape that everybody has seen, there's a tape that I think is about 18 minutes long. That's, I think, body cam footage that most people haven't seen. And that tells us a number of things, including that George Floyd was complaining repeatedly of being unable to breathe when he was, you know, standing up, sitting down, moving around, obviously nobody kneeling on him. And that inability to breathe, that shortness of breath, that is itself a symptom of fentanyl overdose. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, he said repeatedly, seven times, I counted it on the tape, while he's still upright and mobile, he says, I can't breathe. And we've been talking so far about the cause of death. These officers have been charged with murder, which means the prosecution has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that they acted with an intent to cause harm to Mr. Floyd, to cause his death. But if you look at the treatment that these officers afforded to Mr. Floyd, they were actually quite considerate of his condition. When they're trying to get him into the police squad car, this is well before he winds up on the ground, and he's shouting, you know, I can't breathe. He was also saying things like, I'm claustrophobic. Don't put me in this car. I'll die in here, man. And he's expressing this ideation that he's going to die and that he's scared, which, by the way, is classic for excited delirium. So when the police are trying to get him into the squad car, just look at how they handled that situation. He's saying he's claustrophobic and he doesn't want to be in the squad car. They didn't hit him over the head with a nightstick. They didn't punch him, slap him. They didn't use mace on him. They didn't use a taser on him. Instead, they're saying things like, well, okay, you're claustrophobic. Or he says, I'm claustrophobic. And the response is, well, we'll roll the window down on the car if you'll just put your feet in. And at one point, I believe it's Officer Lane says, we'll turn the air conditioning on in the car. I mean, these are not brutal police officers setting out to harm this individual. But that's the manner in which they handled the situation. And at no time were blows struck or was any injury inflicted on him. As a matter of fact, the autopsy report said that they found no life-threatening injuries when they did the autopsy of Mr. Floyd.
So, well, the autopsy also documents, you correct me if I'm wrong here, George, but I'm pretty sure the autopsy says that they found no damage in the neck or throat area.
Right. They found no injury to the structures of the neck. Now, the re-autopsy that was done by my old friend Michael Bodden, the former medical examiner at the City of New York. I mean, I've known Dr. Bodden for 40 years. I've used him as a witness, expert witness in a number of my cases. they claim that they found on the left side of Floyd's neck abrasions on the skin, indicating to them that the kneeling on the right side of Floyd's neck was done with such pressure that that impeded the flow of blood-borne oxygen to Floyd's brain. But when I look at that, number one, if you look at the tape closely, there are three times at least when Mr. Floyd is on the ground. And by the way, he winds up on the ground because he says over and over again, "I want to lay down. I want to lay down. I want to lay down. I'm going down. I'm going down." This is why we're trying to get him into the squad car. So they give up trying to get him into the squad car, and they bring him out and they put him on the ground because that's where he wants to be. So they have to secure him on the ground so he won't injure himself further. He hit his head inside the squad car, and they called for an ambulance when he hit his head inside the squad car. That was the first call for medical assistance. So they get him down on the ground, and they are obligated, since they have him in custody, to keep him from injuring himself further. And so Officer Chauvin is using this neck restraint where he's kneeling on the side of Mr. Floyd's neck. Well, you can see Floyd's head come off the pavement at least three times that I've counted, and Officer Chauvin's knee comes up as Floyd's neck comes up off the ground. If Chauvin was kneeling on Floyd's neck with sufficient force to shut down the flow of blood through both carotid arteries, because you have the carotid artery on each side of your neck, if he had been kneeling on Mr. Floyd's neck with sufficient force to shut down both carotid arteries, you would have seen Floyd expire or become unconscious in a matter of 4 or 5 seconds. Because that's what happens with a chokehold. When you shut down both carotid arteries, the subject goes out cold. Well, that didn't happen. This went on for 8 minutes on the ground. And during that 8 minutes, the fentanyl is kicking in stronger. Floyd is clearly agitated and, again, exhibiting all of the symptoms of excited delirium, which, as I've said before, can lead to sudden cardiac arrhythmia. And in fact, in the autopsy report, the lead cause of death, such as it is stated, because it's not clearly stated in the autopsy report, which is very strange, but right. They put it down to cardiac arrest with complications caused by subdual by the police. I'm not familiar with the term subdual, but that's the word they use. So if you put all of this together, you have Officer Chauvin, people were looking at Officer Chauvin kneeling on the side of his neck, and yet, A, that's an approved technique by the Minneapolis Police Department, and B, he was not kneeling with such force as would cause the blood-borne oxygen to be cut off going to Mr. Floyd's brain. Something else was going on here. And when Mr. Floyd is saying, I can't breathe, and he's calling for his mother, what you're watching is someone who is in the terminal stage of a drug overdose and quite possibly about to expire from cardiac arrhythmia brought on by excited delirium. That's why it's still a horrible tape, but what it looks like they're doing really was not the cause of Mr. Floyd's death. And we know that now because we have the toxicology report, which the authorities did not have at the time that they brought these charges. They rushed to judgment. They brought these charges before they had the results of the toxicology report.
Well, in fact, the mayor of Minneapolis was demanding to know why these police officers were still on the street and hadn't been arrested, you know, like the next day, you know, long before the facts were known. We have to run to a break okay. Right now, George, but we'll be back after these messages with more from George Perry.
DanProfShow.com.
Welcome back to the Dan Proft Show. We are talking with George Perry, former state and federal prosecutor who has very closely studied the facts, the evidence relating to the death of George Floyd. And we've been talking about the fact that the medical evidence and the physical evidence appear to show that the death was due to an overdose of fentanyl. And so, George Perry, it's a little bit ironic because I think this the whole hysteria that's spun out over the death of George Floyd really grows out of the fact that so many people have seen this 8.5 minute tape, but very few have seen the 18 minutes that came before. And so people saw George Floyd lying on the street and didn't understand why. What's he doing on the street? He's being cruelly treated. But we know now that he wanted to be on the street. The police officers just wanted him to sit in the back seat of the squad car until the ambulance came, but he wouldn't do it. And so they're accommodating his wishes. And people think that they're seeing a man die from having a police officer kneel on his neck, but the toxicology suggests that what they're seeing is one of many thousands of Americans who sadly have died from opioid overdoses.
Well, yeah, and keep in mind that this whole narrative that the police sadistically and slowly murdered George Floyd, number one, to accept that theory, you would have to believe that the police, against their own self-interest, carried out this killing in broad daylight in front of civilian witnesses who had cell phone cameras and who were recording the event. And the police were wearing body-worn cameras that were also recording the event. And again, going to the murder theory, that while they were in the act of killing their victim, they twice called for an ambulance to come to the scene to render medical care to their intended victim. I mean, the whole murder theory makes no sense whatsoever. You just have to apply common sense once you have the facts. I mean, the first call for an ambulance came when he hit his head inside the squad car and he suffered a minor cut. And so, they called for an ambulance. But then when he's on the ground, and he's clearly deteriorating while he's on the ground, they placed another call for an ambulance to step it up, to get there sooner, because they were concerned about this guy. And not only that, when the ambulance got there, the police immediately jumped up, put Mr. Floyd in the ambulance, and one of the officers, Officer Lane, got in the ambulance and performed CPR on Mr. Floyd to help out the EMTs in the ambulance. He did CPR on Mr. Floyd all the way to the hospital. And these are the officers who have been charged with murder. And in terms of how truly outrageous this whole thing is, two days after the police had been charged with murder, the medical examiner receives the toxicology report. All of these charges were brought before the toxicology report arrives. And at 7:30 at night on May 31, 2020, the medical examiner has a video conference with two assistant county attorneys who are the prosecutors in the case, presumably. And he goes over the toxicology report and he says, Floyd had 11 nanograms of fentanyl per milliliter. Under normal circumstances, that's a toxic dose. And then he says later on in this conference, if we had found Floyd dead at home or anywhere else, and there were no other contributing factors, I would have death. Which is just another way of saying, hey guys, guess what? You know, these cops you just charged with murder, this was an overdose death.
So George Perry, we have just 1 minute to go before the hard break here, and I'll have to let you go. But as a former prosecutor, the last question I've got is, are they going to be able to get a conviction of these four police officers?
Well, you have to look at what's going on with Black Lives Matter going out to people's homes and threatening them in their homes, like happened to the chief of the Minneapolis Police Union. Anybody serving on a jury, sitting as a juror on this case, is going to have to wonder, if I vote to acquit these officers, will I have a visitation from a bunch of thugs who are going to come to my neighborhood and do God knows what? If everything was normal. We were in normal times where mob rule wasn't going on. I would think the prosecution would have a very difficult time getting a conviction. But as I say, these are not normal times. And any juror who would vote to acquit is going to have to wonder, what's going to happen to me if I follow the evidence and the law and I acquit these officers?
George Perry, thank you very much for being with us on the Dan Proft Show. We're going to go to a break and be right back.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is the Dan Proft Show.